explain as simple as possible, what does it take to sue the government?
There are many ways to sue the government or reasons. Obviously, negligence is one of them. That pertains to this case. We are claiming that Texas A&M, who is a government entity, was negligent in the way they stored the sodium cyanide, as well as allowing Christian Amadeus Taylor access to that sodium cyanide.
From the Carlson Law Firm, welcome to Season 1 of The Verdict, a podcast about the laws and processes that shape the real courtroom outcomes of personal injury cases. I'm your host, Kasia Conway. In October of 2014, news broke of a 20-year-old student on the Texas A&M campus who had somehow ingested sodium cyanide. This was at the peak of the Ebola scare. First responders arrived on scene in hazmat suits with a decontamination tent. As reported by a Bryan College Station news outlet, Christian Taylor was one of 12 people who went through decontamination before even being admitted to the emergency room. Just months earlier, in June of that same year, Christian posted to Facebook that he started a new job as a student worker slash researcher in a Texas A&M lab. The circumstances around Christian's death remain clouded, but one thing is clear. Somehow, Christian ingested sodium cyanide through the straw of his Starbucks cup. In the toxic world that we know as the internet, Christian's death would ultimately spark questions of did he or didn't he. But none of this matters in the context of the lawsuit Christian's parents have brought against Texas A&M University. Instead, as the case makes its way through the court and appeals process, his parents and his attorney are asking two questions. The first, is A&M responsible for the death of this budding scientist? And the second, can we get the state to admit it?
Because Texas A&M is a public university, it is considered a part of the state. So unlike private businesses like Walmart or McDonald's, suing the government requires a court to establish jurisdiction before a personal injury or wrongful death lawsuit can be brought against the entity. To achieve this, a court must waive the state's immunity from lawsuits. For the last 4 years, it's been this lengthy process that has kept the Taylor family from seeing the change that they ultimately want to see.
My name is Jody Leek. I'm an associate with the Carlson Law Firm. I represent the parents of Christian Amadeus Taylor, Kevin Taylor, and Michelle Taylor in a suit against Texas A&M University.
You've gone through several appeals with this case. Can you just give us some background and explain that process?
We have gone through several appeals. I won at the trial court, and the trial court determined that there was subject matter jurisdiction in this case. We ended up in the Court of Appeals due to the fact that Texas A&M University, through the Texas Attorney General's office, maintained their position that the courts did not have subject matter jurisdiction to hear this case.
What did they base that off of?
Subject matter jurisdiction essentially is the power for a court to hear and rule on a case. So, generally speaking, governmental entities have sovereign immunity. That is a common law doctrine, which means there's no statute, there's no law that necessarily states that government entities are immune from suit and or liability. It's just something that was created way back when there was determined that kings could do no harm, mm-hmm. So you couldn't sue the king. That common law doctrine has followed all the way up until today. It has never been, as I mentioned, codified.
If sovereign immunity isn't codified, then what is the point?
The point of sovereign immunity, essentially, as I said, was that a long time ago, a king could do no harm. Nowadays, it's looked at more as a bar to sue a government entity to save the taxpayers' dollars.
Okay.
Essentially, they don't want to allow citizens to sue a government entity for actions that they or their employees did, mm-hmm. and ultimately the taxpayers pay the price.
What is cyanide?
I don't have the greatest scientific answer for you regarding mm-hmm. what sodium cyanide is. My understanding is it is used in the mining of gold. I do know that it is highly toxic, and that answer would probably be better provided by somebody like Christian Amadeus Taylor, who was a biochemistry major at Texas A&M University.
So can you tell us the story of Christian Taylor?
Obviously, I didn't know him. By the time I got the case, unfortunately, he was deceased. What I know of the case, what I know of the family, he was just your typical average college kid. His mom and dad had great aspirations for him. He was, again, a biochemistry major at Texas A&M University. He was working on his degree. He was given a key to the lab. He was able to obtain the sodium cyanide from the lab, and we still, to this day, don't understand why his death occurred. There's speculation as to whether or not he took his own life. There was no suicide note or anything of that nature. No one could pinpoint any certain thing in his life that went wrong that may have pushed him to do this, so that remains unknown at this point.
What is the basis of your lawsuit against A&M?
It's negligence. Now, when you get into sovereign immunity, I have to have, or show rather, the court a waiver of that sovereign immunity. And those are found in what we refer to as the Texas Tort Claims Act, which is Civil Practice and Remedies Code Chapter 101. And I have to prove to the court that the facts of this case fit within one of those limited waivers of sovereign immunity. So that's the long way of saying ultimately we're claiming the negligence of Texas A&M University in allowing him continued and unfettered access to the sodium cyanide.
So how would A&M have known that providing a key to Christian would have posed a danger to him?
That's a good question, because, you know, to prove negligence, you have to show some foreseeability that something bad could have happened. In this particular case, Christian Amadeus Taylor had reached out to Texas A&M University's on-campus counselors, and they had referred him out to see a psychologist or psychiatrist outside of the campus. So they certainly had reason and cause to look into whether or not he had continued an unfettered access to chemicals as deadly as sodium cyanide.
What does the opposing side argue?
Essentially, right now, they haven't even begun to argue whether or not Texas A&M University is negligent or not. Their arguments are based on the fact that they do not believe that the facts of this case fit within one of the limited waivers of sovereign immunity found in the Texas Tort Claims Act.
Okay. And obviously, your response is that it does.
Correct. And again, each case is very specific when it comes to sovereign immunity and, and waivers of sovereign immunity. And the facts of the case, again, have to fit, or at least the court has to determine that the facts of the case fit within one of those limited waivers of sovereign immunity. One is if a government entity uses tangible personal property, which is obviously the key. And it can also be based on the condition of tangible personal property, which would be the sodium cyanide that was not locked up.
This incident happened in 2014. When you took on this case, did you feel any pressure with all of the media coverage that had already surrounded the case?
I didn't. I felt more pressure to represent a family who lost their child. The media can buzz around that all they want. That's not going to affect how I represent my client. They feel that they have a duty to their son and to other people's children to have Texas A&M University held accountable for, for what they did. So I certainly felt a lot of pressure, but none of it was from the media.
So how, if at all, do A&M's motives affect your case?
Well, I think I had mentioned in a press release that this isn't a criminal case. So the word negligence is simply a legal term that means various elements have to be met. One, that someone had a duty to keep someone safe. And that's easy to determine in car wreck cases because everyone knows that you have a duty to drive your car in a manner in which you don't cause injuries. There has to be a breach of that duty. There has to be a causation directly from the duty and the breach that causes damages and injuries. Clearly, when someone sends their child off to a major university, they don't expect them to babysit their child the entire time. However, in a circumstance like this, I believe that Texas A&M University had a duty to keep deadly chemicals out of the hands of individuals who had some degree of mental or emotional problems. And so that's the underlying basis for this suit is that Texas A&M University did have a duty to keep deadly chemicals away from students who may or may not use them intentionally to hurt themselves. Mm-hmm. Because as I mentioned, we don't exactly know what Christian's motives were or how the death exactly occurred. But certainly I'm comfortable in saying that I believe that Texas A&M University had a duty to Christian Taylor, breached that duty, and as a direct and proximate cause, he passed.
As the attorney for the family, what are some of the legal complexities of this case?
The biggest legal complexity and the biggest hurdle to get over, obviously, is sovereign immunity. Mm-hmm. So, again, I have to show that the facts of this case fit within the limited waivers of sovereign immunity that are provided in the Texas Tort Claims Act. We are attempting to do that by showing that he was allowed continued access through use of the key that was given to him by an employee of Texas A&M University. Further, the Texas A&M University lab chose not to lock up the sodium cyanide within the lab.
What are Christian's parents, Kevin and Michelle, what do they want out of this?
Obviously, as an attorney, all I can get them is a monetary award mm-hmm. that would show that A&M University did in fact have a duty to Christian, did breach that duty, ultimately caused his death. All the money in the world is not going to bring Christian Amadeus Taylor back. All the money in the world is not going to heal the emotions and the loss that they feel. So ultimately what they want is the legal system to show that A&M did breach a duty that it had to Christian Taylor, mm-hmm. and through that, possibly and hopefully, prevent this from happening to anyone else.
Kevin and Michelle Taylor, they're the kind of parents we all want. They're loving, they're proud, they're dependable. And when they talk about their son, they have a bit of a twinkle in their eye. But the pain is evident when they relive the moments that they found out what happened to Christian. They were kind enough to sit down with me to talk about their son and the impact that A&M's negligence has had on them and their family.
My name is Michelle Taylor.
And my name is Kevin Taylor, and I'm...
You are the parents of Christian Amadeus Taylor.
Right.
Yes.
Right. Tell us about your son. What were his hobbies? What kind of music did he listen to? What kind of kid was he?
Christian was always an easy kid. He was, even from when he was born. He didn't even cry very much when he was born.
You know, when he got his circumcision and I heard him cry, I laughed because I hadn't heard him cry yet. I don't remember that.
Yeah, and that's the way his whole life was. He was very, very easy, almost never sick. When he did get sick, he was very sick, like pneumonia. Just a beautiful soul. Like, when he was in third grade, he asked for a wall-size, he wrote Santa a letter to ask for a wall-size periodic table of elements. Because he just loved chemistry from such a young age. And we had a huge junk drawer. We had tons of stuff in there because he was always creating and making things out of that. He was also so funny.
He was. He was probably the funniest person I've ever met. We always thought he could have gone into comedy writing and written for Saturday Night Live or something. Yeah. Smart, thoughtful, compassionate. I don't think anybody... I think everybody... that new Christian felt like they were his best friend because he made people feel like that. And he listened. He was always there for people. And just a good, solid kid.
Yeah. Good person.
So when it came time to choose a university, why did he choose A&M?
Well, he had considered a lot of different universities, but during his, I want to say it was... I can't remember if it was his junior year or senior year. We took a day and went down for a tour. And we were about 15 minutes into the tour. And he turned to me and said, "Dad, this is where I want to go." And I said, "Are you sure?" Because he had considered, you know, UT and other universities as well. And he hadn't visited any of them. But there was something about the culture at A&M that really appealed to him. It didn't take long after they were talking about, you know, their customs and traditions that they have there, which is so strong at A&M, that he just knew that that was the place where he wanted to go.
What were you doing, and how were you notified about what happened to your son?
It was a Wednesday evening. I remember the day, the 15th of October. We had an early dismissal at school, and we had professional development that afternoon. I remember we got home relatively early, and I think we were in the room just cleaning up, getting ready to go to bed. And the phone rang, and it was a police officer with Bryan Police Department, and told us that he was in the hospital and that we needed to come. We quickly got everything together and left and drove, and on the way we got phone calls from the doctors. It was hard. When you get that call, I don't know how you're supposed to react. We just knew we needed to be there, contacted our pastor and asked for prayers.
We needed to get gas.
Yeah.
And I went out to a field by the gas station and just cried and prayed.
Yeah. And at that point, that was what we needed to do. So we were shocked. We had no idea, you know, who does have that idea that something's going to happen to their child like that.
Yeah.
Why did you decide to file a lawsuit against A&M?
There were a lot of reasons, I think, from the very beginning when we went into his hospital room. There were just so many things that weren't right, and we knew it wasn't right. Then when the other investigators came in, they didn't really answer any questions either. Then I think that's the first time we heard, it was suicide. And even the doctor, who was wearing a Texas A&M shirt when he came in, is saying the same thing. And I was like, no. That's absolutely ridiculous.
When I was a member of the military, I was highly trained in weapons, but I could not walk into the arms room and grab a weapon. I couldn't have access to that. What Christian died from ingesting was cyanide, probably the most poisonous substance. And he only had that access because he was in that lab at A&M, and A&M didn't take measures to ensure the safety of their students. God forbid Christian would have taken that cyanide out of the lab for a nefarious purpose to hurt somebody else. He could have hurt a lot of people. And I think A&M needs to keep kids safe. And yeah. I don't want any parent to have to get that phone call and have to go through that.
Yeah, and I feel like in a lot of ways they used Christian. His brilliance, I mean, he was always just such a brilliant kid, and he would text me, like one time he sent me this text message that said, "Mom, I smell like beer, and it's 4 o'clock in the morning, and I'm walking across campus," and I was like, "What the heck?" And he said, "No, because I've been growing yeast, and I don't mind staying up late to make this, to do this research." So he would go into the lab and be by himself doing all of these things that required a lot of work so that his professors could get published. So I feel like they owed him some sort of supervision or some sort of safety. Plus, you know, when we talked to the investigators the different times that we went up there, they asked for his computer, we gladly gave it to him. They asked for his phone, we gave it to him. They couldn't tell us where his car was. And I couldn't understand that. How come you can't tell us where his car is when Kevin went online and it said he had last parked at this place? And that's through their Texas A&M system. So I knew they weren't telling us everything. And I thought, my son can't go to 7-Eleven and buy a beer, but he can go get cyanide for research that's not even something that he's working with right now. Mm-hmm. He wasn't working with cyanide. So do they not have some sort of responsibility to make sure, to the whole community, and to my son, to not do this, to have better control over it? And then, what about the next Christian? What about the next kid that goes in there? They were so unfazed by what happened. The investigators even told us that they didn't have access to the cameras. I have access to the cameras on my campus. You're not telling me the truth. So they were not honest. even if it's not that one person's thing to want to oversee, the person in charge has to own it, and you have to be honest about it. And they weren't. So that tells me they're not going to change unless they feel something that makes them change. Something's going to have to compel them to do things differently.
Did either of you anticipate this level of scrutiny? And if so, how do you manage to deal with it?
So I don't think we've really felt the scrutiny from anyone. No one's mm-hmm. contacted us with, no. You know, with anything negative.
We have had to get our other kids through it.
Yeah. I think when you're opposing an institution that is as storied as Texas A&M, that you're going to attract some negative attention. And it's not about Texas A&M and the Aggies as a community, because they are a great storied community. A lot of respect for those folks and the culture that they've built there. But it's somebody's responsibility. And the people who are put in charge and have those offices of trust in that organization have to take responsibility for actions or non-actions that lead to the injury or death of somebody. It's just, it's basic responsibility.
I didn't anticipate, I never would have, some things that have been shocking to me, are some of the ugly things that people said. Like, you wouldn't anticipate if somebody did kill themselves, that people would say things that they would say.
How has this lawsuit, the process of it, shaped your opinion of the American legal system?
Well, I know that there's a process, and I have faith that those that are elected and appointed to those positions to hear the case are going to use the rule of law mm-hmm. and in the spirit of the law, the way that it's intended to protect the citizens. I know that not everyone may agree, and the case may not be fruitful at the end, but I feel like it'll be heard and it'll be considered. We saw that in the first two proceedings, that a lot of questions were asked and mm-hmm. there was a lot of information presented. So I have faith in the system that things will go right. And even if it doesn't work out as a case, it'll be in the public eye, and maybe it'll make some changes, even if the case doesn't make it. That maybe still somebody at A&M is listening and will take measures to, correct things that aren't being done correctly.
And I have a mixture of emotions. In some ways, I'm like, you've got to be kidding me. They don't even want to hear our case. Like, what would be the harm in hearing the case? You're talking about somebody losing their life. It doesn't seem just to me. In other ways, it's given me a great peace to know that Jody believes in our case, and there are people that believe in our case. Even that the first judge found reason and cause to support it, just to see our side of it. I do hope and pray that change comes, because how can you say, even if we were the ones that killed him, you can't hear the case? It is absurd. I don't understand why Texas A&M isn't taking any action. And I feel like they're not. Or they surely would have told us that.
Sure.
Why is it important for you both to tell Christian's story?
Well, he's gone. And his death should make a difference for others. His was a valuable life that we lost that day. Not just the effect, our family will never be the same without Christian. You think about what you're missing or what you would have experienced.
The jokes he would have told.
But he's gone because of neglect, and his death has to contribute to fixing that neglect.
Yeah. And he's not here to tell the story. He's not here to tell you that some of his work was published by his professors after his death as their own. He's not here to tell you that he felt pressured to get stuff done beyond what a kid, and he was one, should feel. who's attending the university even though they're paying him minimum wage. He is a loss to this world. He was a brilliant person, and he is a loss. But no child should enter that lab with what they have, what they're being exposed to. It has to change. And what would we be if we didn't suffer through this? What would we be?
According to the family's attorney, Jody Leek, a win for the Taylor family could have lasting effects on our judicial system.
It certainly has the potential to affect case law. Mm-hmm. Obviously, it's not going to change the statute at all, but courts of appeals and the Texas Supreme Court have the ability to interpret what our Texas legislature has put into the statutes regarding waivers of sovereign immunity. In that vein, it does have the potential to affect case law, and that case law does interpret waivers of sovereign immunity. In this case, specifically the use and condition of tangible personal property, and also there is a case called San Antonio State Hospital versus Cohen that stated that mere use without anything more, or rather the government entity allowing someone to use the property without anything more, does not constitute use on the government entity's behalf. In this case, Christian was arguably a agent of Texas A&M in his work in the lab, in as much as he was doing experiments for Texas A&M University and not necessarily just for his education.
Well, where does the case stand now?
The case right now stands at the Texas Supreme Court.
Mm-hmm.
Essentially, on behalf of Christian's parents, I filed a petition for review because the Court of Appeals overturned the trial court's decision that they did have subject matter jurisdiction, i.e. that sovereign immunity was waived based on the facts of the case. That the appellate court overturned that.
Mm-hmm.
And so on behalf of Christian's parents, we filed a petition for review to the Texas Supreme Court, and we are now awaiting them to determine whether or not they want additional briefing and whether or not they're going to take the case up.
When will you know?
I don't have an exact date. It is the Texas Supreme Court, so their timeline is based on, you know, when they get these cases, and I'm sure they have quite a full docket.
Mm-hmm.
But there's not really any way of rushing them, so I don't really have a clear indication as to when I'm going to get an answer from them.
The Taylor family and their attorney are still waiting to find out if the Texas Supreme Court will hear the case. In the meantime, the family continues to hope the state will allow them to see justice for their son. The family also hopes to see change at the university so that what happened to Christian never happens again. If you or a loved one suffered injuries because of the negligence of another, visit us at carlsonattorneys.com, where we offer valuable resources on the topic you just listened to. We'd also love for you to leave us a review wherever you get your podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and recommend us to your friends. As always, if you're in need of a personal injury attorney, give us a call at 1-800-359-5690. We are available 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. We care, and we can help.